Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, February 12th. There's a good reason why I don't tweet and refuse to do a daily commentary. It's all about my mantra, wait 24 hours. No clearer example of this have we had in recent memory than the events in Egypt that led to the ouster of President Hosni Mubarak. I comment further on this specific titanic event down below, but in light of the fact it was a week with little economic news worldwide, it gives me a chance to catch up and do my best to summarize as succinctly as possible all I've been saying these past 6-7 weeks in particular, beginning with my outlook for 2011 back on January 1. We've learned once again geopolitics matter, but it's extremely important to treat each issue individually and not lump them all together. Outside of the initial market scare on Friday, January 28, when stocks swooned over the uncertainty concerning Egypt, the markets handled the crisis well, which was for two reasons. First, the violence and images on television were limited, with 99% of the 300-plus deaths appearing off-screen. And second, Egypt has little oil. When I talk of geopolitical risk, put what happened in Egypt instead in Saudi Arabia or Iran, and until a resolution was reached, the markets would have been totally convulsed. If I have to pick just two hotspots now, though, I'd say Lebanon, controlled largely by Iran at this point, and Pakistan. There's been little news in the past few weeks since Hezbollah orchestrated their own coup in Lebanon, but this is but a small respite before the situation heats up anew. While Pakistan remains an incredibly volatile hellhole with a ton of moving parts. But geopolitical risk is also about terrorism. I warn of the kinds of events that can shatter confidence in a nanosecond and thus impact spending in the financial markets. A Chechen attack in Russia is of virtually zero concern to yours truly. A similar suicide attack at Charles de Gaulle, Heathrow, or Newark Liberty is an entirely different matter that would impact global commerce, at least in the short term. We learned this week, for example, that Al-Qaeda in Yemen, the group headed by the evil cleric al-Awlaki, is really the primary threat to America these days, not the Al-Qaeda of Osama bin Laden and Ayman Zawahiri. Our national security apparatus told us the threat from al-Awlaki is very real. Geopolitical risk of a terrorist nature, though, is different from a state level. The state level normally gives you some time to react. The terrorist obviously doesn't. On the global economic front, you have an emerging Asia, ex-Japan, that, despite some serious inflation headlines, continues to rock. Indonesia's fourth quarter GDP, for example, was up 6.9%, the best there in 6 years. China and India, while showing signs of slowing and facing serious inflation on the food front, nonetheless are still projected to both grow 8-9% in 2011. India's industrial production for December came in up 1.6%, not as fast as recent history, but then you see the January car sales there spiked 26%. China increased interest rates a third time in 4 months, but property prices continue to rise, not good. While retail sales during the two-week Lunar New Year holiday rose 19%, spectacular, and a super sign when looking at a hoped-for trend where the consumer in China starts to spend so that the economy isn't solely focused on exports. But next week, we get inflation data from China. It's not supposed to be good, which will mean further rate hikes down the road with the risk that at some point the economy could roll over. I'm not forecasting this, but I've been increasingly concerned for months now. In Europe, the patient, ex-Germany, remains in serious condition, and in the case of about half the Euro 17 nations, far from stable. I got a kick out of an IMF official on Friday saying Greece had been officially rescued, though at the same time recommended another $20.3 billion for it out of the bailout fund. Another basket case, Ireland has their snap election in just 2 weeks, February 25th. The two parties that will split the vote, Fine Gael and Labour, both will demand the EU-IMF bailout be restructured. The odds of this happening beyond a minimal interest rate reduction are nil. The six Irish banks also need an immediate substantial cash infusion. But the big news in Euroland this week was the sudden resignation of Bundesbank President Axel Weber a hardline inflation fighter, who German Chancellor Angela Merkel was assuring would take over for departing European Central Bank President Jean-Claude Trichet. Merkel's party is under the gun in upcoming state elections, and she was counting on Weber to be her ally and the ECB in terms of pushing through her agenda of tough love for nations such as Ireland and Greece. Merkel knows the German people will not stomach the idea of more of their tax money going to bail out sick cousins. Now, Trichet's replacement won't be a German, and this is a big blow for the Chancellor. The European Union is having critical meetings on March 11 and March 24-25, at which point it is expected the EU will wrap up a final agreement on a bailout mechanism going forward, and a possible increase in the existing bailout pool. But again, Germans don't want to contribute any more of their own cash to help others. Bottom line, Europe still matters, even in the U.S., and what Europe needs more than anything else is growth. And with sick balance sheets and austerity programs just beginning to hit, growth is not what most European nations will see. What of the economy in the United States? No doubt, the $858 billion tax cut extension stimulus program of last December will help, and the Federal Reserve's quantitative easing too will continue to juice the stock market per the Fed's plan until it ends this coming June. Then we'll all look around and ask, now what? The U.S. continues to face major headwinds. Housing, for starters. Zillow.com this week announced that in the fourth quarter, a full 27% of single-family homes in America were underwater. Las Vegas leads the way with a staggering 81%, followed by Phoenix at 70%. Disturbingly, Atlanta's rate surged from 36% to 54%. This while the interest rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage hit the 5% level, up from November's record low, 4.17%. 5% is not enough to keep a qualified home buyer from purchasing, but if we march up to, say, 6%, for most folks, that's probably a deal breaker. You also have the ongoing issue of state and local governments continuing to slash their budgets. As economist Mark Zandi noted the other day on CNBC, quote, there's no more serious drag on economic growth than the severe budget cutbacks at the state and local level, close quote. And the federal government's own cuts are to follow. And then there's the inflation issue. I've been as clear as possible on this one. Inflation is a serious concern in the developing world, and obviously we saw some examples of this in the unrest in Tunisia and Egypt, which was precipitated to some extent, though far from all, by soaring food prices. But this is not the situation in the U.S. and much of the developed world. However, inflation is beginning to bite when it comes to profit margins, and if gasoline prices surged to $4, then goodbye thoughts of 3.5% to 4% GDP growth for all of 2011 in America. Here's where I respectfully differ with those in the inflation camp. This is a spike we are witnessing, partially fed by poor fundamentals, i.e. the droughts we are now all aware of, including China's, as well as speculation. The news out of the USDA that projects U.S. corn supplies to come in near record lows set 15 years ago, in 1996, was not a surprise. I'm now on record, though, as saying by May we will begin to hear better news on the harvest front, including, importantly, from Australia, where for all the damage the recent rains have done, it has also done wonders on reservoirs that are suddenly near full capacity after being at 20% or less the previous few years. I also stated for the record that the diversified CRB index of 19 commodities will finish the year lower than 333.90, a figure I picked a few weeks ago. It ended 2010 at 332.80 and closed this week at 337.78. For now, though, no doubt the inflation spike in food prices will help slow global growth. Then prices will decline. I keep thinking back to 2008. On July 2nd of that year, as oil peaked at $147 a barrel, the CRB hit its high of $473.51. Granted, the financial crisis followed that fall, but the fact is we finished the year at $229.54. Draw your own conclusions. I've drawn mine. But one last word on this topic. Fed Chairman Bernanke, in testimony to Congress this week, said Treasury bond rates have increased despite his buying of government bonds because of the outlook for an improving economy, not because of the feeling in the bond pits that the Fed is behind the curve when it comes to fighting inflation. I believe rates have been heading higher for three reasons: the perception the Fed is behind the curve, the improving economy, and fears of a debt shock that will hit us in 2012, sooner than many believe, in the form of a major credit downgrade. But for now, I do not believe interest rates will go that much higher than existing levels, because after we run through this current inflation scare, prices will come down, and the chief component of a product, labor or wages, just isn't going to rise in any substantial fashion. On to Egypt. Yep, I'm glad I wasn't writing this column Thursday night. The following was posted on the Financial Times website a few hours before Hosni Mubarak stepped down. I'll protect the author's name. Been there, done that. Quote, Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak didn't blink in the face of protests that extended all over the country. He did not relinquish power. His stubborn refusal to move now sets the stage for confrontation between Egypt's security forces and the protesters. The winner remains deeply uncertain. What is clear, however, is that Mr. Mubarak, and in particular the army, are not going to give up easily. Oops. Sure, all of us were surprised when Hosni failed to step down on Thursday, and we all awaited a day of bloodshed on Friday. Thankfully, Mr. Mubarak finally accepted his walking papers, while the man the United States wanted all along to assume control on a temporary basis, Omar Suleiman, is leading the transition. Transition to what is the big question now? One cannot lose sight of the fact that Egypt remains a basket case on February 12, just as it was 18 days earlier. I have been careful to say little about the Obama administration's response the first 17 days, but let's face it, it was all over the place, especially when looking at the actions of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Obviously, the intelligence apparatus down in Langley leaves something to be desired as well. CIA Director Leon Panetta could have answered the congressional inquiry in so many other ways instead of then looking like a stooge. As for the United States and its allies, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Israel are none too pleased at the pressure Washington placed on Egypt's leadership to have Mubarak sent into exile. There's a power vacuum now in the Muslim world's most populous country at a time when the likes of Iran could stir up further unrest through its proxies. So we just sit back and watch. Suleiman and his cronies, who might be plotting now against Suleiman, need to establish order quickly and get the economy moving again, thus creating an atmosphere where tourists feel safe to return. Not me, Jack. As for elections, the Muslim Brotherhood is the only organized party, and outside of carpetbagger Mohammed al-Baradei, there are a mere handful, if that, of obvious political leaders among the citizen class. What the Obama administration must insist on, though, for starters, is that Egypt keep its treaty obligations. For now, remember some of what is getting lost in the euphoria. Hundreds of hardcore militants escaped from prison in those first days. Tens of thousands of weapons were looted from armories, particularly outside Cairo. One can hope for the best, but also prepare for the worst. Charles Krauthammer, Washington Post. We are unwillingly again parties to a long twilight struggle, this time with Islamism, most notably Iran, its proxies, and its potential allies, Sunni and Shiite. We should be clear-eyed about our preferred outcome. Real democracies governed by committed Democrats, and develop policies to see this through. A freedom doctrine is a freedom agenda given direction by guiding principles. Truman did it, so can we. That was Charles Krauthammer. George Will in the Washington Post. It is a sign of national maturity, the product of hard learning from Korea and Vietnam to Iraq and Afghanistan, that fewer American complainers are today faulting the Obama administration for not anticipating and shaping events in Egypt. Israel, which lives next door to Egypt and has an excellent intelligence service, did not see this coming. So, a modest proposal. Those Americans who know which Republican will win next year's Iowa caucuses can complain about those who did not know that when a Tunisian street vendor set himself on fire, he would set a region afire. From all other Americans, forbearance would be seemly. We still do not know how the process begun by America's intervention in Iraq will end, or, for that matter, how to mark the end of a great historical convulsion. In Egypt, Egyptians will tell us how it ends. That was George Will. Stocks powered forward yet again with the Dow Jones up 1.5% to 12,273. The S&P 500 up 1.4%, NASDAQ advancing 1.4%. The reasons for the rally were, well, gee, I really don't know. There was no economic news to speak of, and the few earnings reports that were released were far from energizing or downright awful. But maybe it's a fact $12 billion has been invested in domestic stock funds the past 4 weeks, while investors have yanked $22.5 billion out of bond funds in the past 12 weeks, according to USA Today and the ICI. Or maybe it was the Super Bowl result. You see, according to my proprietary indicator, which you can find on my Wall Street history link, in each of the prior 11 years in which the loser scored more than 20 points, the market finished up. So much for my forecast of stocks finishing down then, 5 to 7% in 2011. Remember, the final score was 31-25. That's all for this week. I am not going to be doing a podcast the next 2 weeks because I'm going to be traveling. I'll be out on the West Coast. And hope you have a great week. Happy Valentine's Day to all the women out there. And good luck. Take care. Bye.